Hello swimmers, and welcome to another episode of Torpedo Swim Talk Podcast. I'm your host Danielle Sperling, and each week we chat to a master swimmer from around the world about their swimming journey. This week's podcast guest is Ken Brisbane from sunny California. Ken heads up the coaching team for the Long Beach Grunions, based out of Three Pools in southern LA. I really enjoy getting his in-depth views on training master swimmers and the way he structures programs for his team. And he comes from a place of authenticity, recently taking out the Coach of the Year award for the Southern Pacific Masters Conference. Later in the week, I'll be putting out a full training set from Ken on all the Torpedo Swim Talk socials. But in the meantime, let's hear from Ken.
There you go,
Bob. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
You're so welcome. It's been hard to pin you down. I'm glad we finally got you.
Busy coaching and everything else. So I apologize, but I'm glad we have some time.
No, absolutely no problems at all. Where are you coming to us from today?
I live in California. I coach in Long Beach, California, but I live in Orange County, California, which is about, well, for me, it's about 35 to 40 minutes from the pool.
Right. So you've got to battle that LA traffic.
Yes, which can be fun.
Do you get much swimming in yourself, or is it mainly now these days you're in the coaching sort of sphere?
It's mainly coaching that I do. I also do a lot of volunteering. I'm the chair of Southern Pacific Master Swimming for Southern California, and then I'm also the chair of United States Masters Coaching. So it's a lot of calls like this. And so unfortunately, I do not get in the pool very often unless my swimmers give me a hard time about a set and they tell me that I can't do it, then I need to get in and show them that I can still do it.
When was the last time you hopped in?
Oh, it's probably been 7-8 months since I've actually done a workout in a pool.
Right. Wow. Well, let's have a bit of a talk about your coaching. I know you coach the Long Beach Grunions Master Swim Team. Tell us how you found yourself coaching Masters.
So I actually joined the team in 2004. It was a much smaller team at the time, and the team was heading to an IGLA championship, which is the International Gay Lesbian Aquatic World Championships. So they needed somebody to coach while they were gone. And as an age group swimmer, I had won coaches awards several times. So I think it's always been ingrained in me to coach. And from that point on in 2004, I started swimming and coaching as one of the coaches for the Grunions.
Fantastic. How big is your Grunions team? How many members do you have?
Now we're 150 swimmers.
Wow. Okay. And how many workouts do you have on your schedule each week?
Oh, we just added more. We have 11 workouts. Wow. So we offer a 5:30 in the morning, and then we offer a 7 p.m. at night on most days. And then Saturdays, we offer an hour and a half. And then we're now bringing on Sundays. When COVID and the whole thing hit, we lost, of course, we lost all our pools. But now we're slowly getting back into the number of practices that we offered before.
And are you mainly centered out of one pool, or do you go across a few different locations?
We have three pools. We work out at the Belmont Pool, which the Belmont Pool was a really famous pool for many years and got torn down. Now they have a Mirtha Pool there. Our second pool is an indoor pool because even in Southern California, it gets cold when it's 60 and we want to be indoors. So we have an indoor pool. And then we also work out at Long Beach City College. It's a brand new, amazing facility. So three main pools. We don't have our own pool. We pay, do permits for each of those pools to practice.
Right. And the new pool at the college, is that a 50-meter pool, or is it in yards or meters? What's the setup there?
So it's yards one way, meters the other way, 50 meters, movable bulkhead, dive pool. The team just hosted the regional short course meters championships there in December. Had about 400 swimmers there, but the facility is top notch and amazing. We love it.
Sounds beautiful. And so master swimmers coming from overseas, can they drop in on one of your workouts?
Overseas, anywhere can drop in.
Fantastic.
We welcome all master swimmers. We feel it should be a community, right? Of swimming together and having fun and meeting like-minded people. So absolutely, anybody can drop in anytime. As long as you're a USMS member, that's all we require. Is it, you know, whether, or in FINA, whatever your governing body is, that you have some type of certification. Yep.
And what do you enjoy most about coaching adults? Because I think there's not as many specialized master swimming coaches out there. And I love the fact that you are. What inspires you to coach masters? I know you said that you fell into it, but why do you keep going back for more?
Oh, not a quick, simple answer, I don't think. I mean, I enjoy the camaraderie. I enjoy being able to help adults achieve something, something that maybe they didn't think they could do. I enjoy the idea that fitness is really important for adults, and this is a fun way to do it. I just love everything about it, and the team dynamics of it is really why I love to coach. You know, I love being able to show an adult that you can still learn something and hopefully do it without hurting.
And what are some of the challenges you find when you're coaching master swimmers?
Well, I think master swimmers are just adults with kids, so I don't think it's too much different than teaching kids. Challenges. I think more the obstacle that they can't do it. Now, I'm not saying that if you have some type of medical reason, of course, right? But I always try to stress to them that, you know, it is more mental to me than physical. You can do it. But you have to want to do it also. And hopefully, you know, being positive on deck and everything else is going to get you to want to do it. You know, you do get some people who, as an adult, obstacles that can only, want to do freestyle. I'm only here to do freestyle. I don't want to do anything else. Right. So, you know, well, let's start out with doing some backstroke. It's still a long access, stroke. So let's do some backstroke. And then maybe we can work in some breaststroke and butterfly with some clinic and techniques, you know, because I don't want you learning those strokes without having the basics down, because you can likely, you know, hurt yourself a little bit, or it's just not being good for your bones as we get older is what it comes down to. But, you know, those are some of the challenges that I run into. Nothing that I've never been able to overcome. You got to just find a way to work with that swimmer and what's going to get through to them is what it comes down to.
How do you structure a practice so you sort of encompass all the different levels that you would find? Because you will obviously have a sort of a spread of speed.
Yeah, I don't. I just make them do whatever I want. I'm kidding.
I can see you kidding.
we have what I call the collegiate level, your middle swimmers, and then we have what's called on our team the cocktail lane. So our cocktail lane are your more beginner swimmers, you know, that don't know all the strokes or, you know, what all the jargon is. So when I write a workout, I technically will write one workout divided either by, if they're doing 10 100s, they're doing 5 100s. You know, if they're doing 10 100s on a certain time, this may be doing, you know, of course, 5 100s on a separate time. If they're doing lots of IM work, which is what I really like to coach, then they can do freestyle, and it's masters anyway, so they're going to do whatever they want a lot of times, you know. So I do have one workout for all range of the swimmers, but it's curtailed to that section of the pool, or it's on the fly curtailed to who shows up that day. You know, I may only have one, what I call the high level collegiate swimmers, and I may have a ton of middle or the other swimmers. And so I just may on the fly have to adjust it to what we're doing.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's what any good coach does anyway. So I think you have that program in your back, in your mind or on the board, and then you need to adjust it as you go, depending on who's there.
Yeah. I don't write on the board. I actually give them a sheet of paper with their workout that's in a clear plastic, you know, binder thing on the kickboard, but I don't let them see it really in advance because I don't want them to either give me a hard time about what's coming up. I want them to focus on what they're doing right now during the workout, not that 400 IM set stuff that's coming up later, right? So
Yeah. I feel like there are two types of swimmers. One type that really wants to know everything that's going to be on for the day, and the other type that just wants to know the set that they're doing right then and there and not what's coming up.
Yeah. The ones that want to know everything, they want to know how much effort they need to give at the beginning to save at the end. And I want you to give what the set's supposed to be giving during that time. So I don't want you seeing the rest of it. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. We don't want any Sally save ups. That's for sure. And out of your team of around 150, how many of those are competing on a regular basis around about?
It is fluid. Right now, we probably have 20 or 30, I'd say 20 that go to meets consistently. The majority of them are fitness swimmers and are there for the, like I said earlier, the camaraderie, the socialization, the community of it, you know, swimming at meets is not a requirement for our team. And one of the biggest challenges to me with newer swimmers is they hear the word swim meet off the blocks and, you know, they start sweating, right? So, because they've never done it, they weren't an age group kid. So you get them to a meet because we're going to go have food and drinks after the meet. So that gets them to the meet. And then they actually see in Masters, people are starting on the deck. They're starting in the water. It's not your fastest swimmers in the area that's coming to this meet. There are 20-year-olds and there are 90-year-olds. And, you know, we have a 101-year-old lady in our LMSC that's still swimming and, of course, setting records every time she gets in the pool. And once they see it, it's much easier. So we try to increase that number. But it is fluid because there's been years over my 20 years to where that'll decrease down to like 8 people and it's all fitness and they don't really want to do meets. And I'm okay with that. You know, that's fine.
Yeah. How do you think as a Masters community, we can sort of overcome? I mean, I feel like a lot of people found, particularly open water swimming during COVID here in Australia, it was probably similar to you guys in California, but getting those people across into Masters swimming in the pool and then introducing them to racing, I feel like there is that stigma attached to it. What do you see we can do as a community that would help them to move towards competition?
Well, I think, toward competition, I think is just to get them to go to a Masters meet. I really do. You know, we do practice meets sometimes at the pool itself where, you know, I'll be the starter and the official and everything else. You know, we can work on that and get some of those bugs worked out. And, you know, a lot of their fear is, oh my God, my goggles are going to come off when I hit the water, which happens to all of us. And it has happened to all of us, you know? So I think it's just getting them there, having them see what it's really about, see how friendly it is. You know, just because the word Masters is in there doesn't mean, you know, that it's top echelon all the way around. You know, we're just there to have a good time, compete against yourself, do a good relay with your swim, you know, your buddies on the swim team and have a good time. So
yeah, I think so.
Our team doesn't have a challenge of getting them there. It's more just I want to come to practice 4 or 5 days a week. I just don't really want to compete. I love this. I love your workouts. I, you know, love the team. You know, it's not a big push for us to be at a competition, but I will be right there if you want to be. And I will hold your hand if I need to. I'll walk it, you know, to the blocks, you know, show you where the psych sheets are, you know, whatever. We'll hold your hand. And you bring your spouse, the other one, so you have support, right? You know. And seeing them cheer you on and hearing your team cheer you on is another thing. One of our biggest things, and this is the case with a lot of Masters teams, is, you know, having a lot of the team by the pool at your first meet, you know, and really cheering you on, you know, to finish it. And, you know, so that's a good thing. And then on our team, if this is your first meet as a Master swimmer on our team, we pay for your enter fees and everything else. So it's free. You know, and you can treat it like a workout, maybe a little faster, hopefully, but you can treat it like a workout.
Yeah, I love that message. I think that's a really user-friendly way of getting people involved.
Yeah. It's, you know, to me, it's not like high school, college, or, you know, younger age group. Let's just go to a master's meet and have a really good time and meet some really great people.
Bearing in mind what you've just said, how do you structure your programs overall over the season? Do you gear it towards competitions coming up, or do you periodize your program? Give us a bit of an insight to that.
Our team doesn't really focus on USMS national championships. Our team focuses on IGLA once a year, right? The International Gay and Lesbian World Championships. So this year it's going to be in London later this year at the Olympic Stadium there. So when we have something like that to focus on, we will do a 16, 32-week program, you know, of endurance and E1, EN1 training, EN2, SP training, you know, heart rate, test sets, all of that kind of stuff. If we're not really focusing on it, our team has built up, I have four other coaches, each specializing in something, whether it be technique work or swimming until you fail work or distance, you know, so we kind of stick with that otherwise. So the only time I actually do a seasonal planning is when we're planning for something big that the whole team is going to. And then we pull out all the stops. We bring out, you know, a big poster board and you put a star on there for your practice today. And whoever has the most stars gets something at the end, but, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that I can't take credit for that. That was started by some other coaches before me, but it's an amazing thing.
Yeah. And so do you have a coaching director, or are you the coaching director of the Grunions?
And I'm the head coach. Yeah. On the team.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said there's four or five others. So you all share the load, obviously, over the week.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah. I am not coaching those 5:30 a.m. You know, I'm a morning person. And if I swim, I'll swim at 5:30 a.m. But I don't want to coach at 5:30 a.m. I want to, you know, swimming gets me up and awake and everything else. And, you know, as a coach, you have to be on deck saying good morning. And you just may not feel it yet because you haven't been up that long. So,
yeah
I have some coaches that love their 5:30 a.m. practices, but I'll the nights and the weekends are fine.
Yeah. So talk us through sort of a typical program that you would give to your swimmers. Like, what are you going to give to them this Saturday when you coach them?
Well, like I said, I do a lot of IM work. So we're going to start out, you know, on Saturdays. I do an hour and a half. So we're going to start out with roughly a 15-minute warm-up. You know, I really want them to get the blood flowing. I'm not one of those sticklers that, you know, this is what you have to do in your warm-up. You just need to get moving, and I want you to work the upper and lower body. Now, I may give, you know, 2-2-2, which is a 200 swim kick pull. You know, I may do 6 150s, 100 swim 50 kick. I just want you to work on getting your blood flowing and warmed up. And with master swimmers, you know, they're all on time every practice, as we know, you know, so I, you know, they show up 5 minutes late and 7 minutes late. So just get in and get your, you know, body warm. And then after the 15-minute warm up, I will stop and do team announcements about what meets are coming up. Do we have a social coming up? Who broke team records? You know, anything that's relevant to what's going on with the team. And then we'll get into a set. And again, I coach a lot of IM stuff. So I'll do IM ladders and, you know, stroke work and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the workout, I like to occasionally do some type of fun kick set so they can intermingle. And, you know, if we can, you need to switch lanes. Don't do the kick set with the person you were swimming with because, you know, again, this is a social thing. Get to know everybody, you know. So but again, my practices are mainly built up of IM stuff like that and then something fun at the end. And then occasionally if I'm, you know, not in a good mood, a really good challenge set at the end.
What? Give us an example of an IM ladder. What would you do?
Well, you know, I could do 50 butterfly, 100 back, 200 breast, 400 free, you know, 100 or a 100 IM, 200, 400 IM, you know, wear fins if you need to when you get to those 400 IMs. You know, there's a bunch of different ones that, you know, luckily coaching for years, I have this thick encyclopedia of workouts. Yeah. Well, I have to be honest, it's not in my head, but I have spreadsheets and spreadsheets and spreadsheets that I go through and I'll tweak them as I go based on what's going on this year. But yeah, I really go back to my big, huge database thing on there now. Because we're all coaches. We all steal from each other. I didn't come up with the very first, you know, IM set ever. We're all out there looking at each other's workouts saying, oh, that sounds like a good idea.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I store all mine in my head, but I did used to write them down. But yes, I'm like you. I'm actually only on the coaching roster once a month at the moment for my master's team. But I'll take things from everywhere that I see, and depending on who's there, as you say, and what type of part of the training cycle we're in, I'll adjust it like that.
Oh yeah, it's great when a coach is in the water and they get out and say, "Oh, can I have your workout?" They want to take it with them. I'm thrilled about that. And the same thing, the best thing to me is when they get out at the end of the practice saying, that was a really good set. We all eat that up. We're all shallow and we want that back, right?
Absolutely. I think the sign of a good workout is a swimmer getting out exhausted saying, thank you. That's great. Right.
No, but I do tease my swimmers that, if you're still talking in a normal voice halfway through my workout, you are not working hard enough. I need to see you huffing and puffing in the set. If you can get my out or coach out, then that's fine. But if anything else comes out, you need to work harder.
Yes. Are you a coach that likes to use lots of equipment in your sessions?
I have specific sets, whether I do pull or buoys or both. But it's masters, and they're going to, they're going to do what they want a lot of times. Now, if I have a set that I do not want them using any gear at all, I will let them know ahead of time that, absolutely not, no gear. You can do this one set, with no gear. And this is why we're doing it with no gear. I'm not a big kickboard fan for adults. Most adults, I don't know. For me, it can be a bad arch of the back using a kickboard. So I would much rather you on your back with your biceps pressed into your ears, or on your side, one arm in front of you looking down at the black line if you're going to be kicking. So the kickboard's the only thing that I do not use a lot, unless it's a kick set and they want to talk, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
Yeah, social kicks, all right. But yeah, I agree with you. I've taken the kickboard out of my sessions I give and sessions I swim. And often if I'm giving kick, I'll do backstroke kick.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's even my swimmers that are just learning, they can use a kickboard a little bit. They can use a kickboard on their back with it above their head a little bit. But I would much prefer them to learn to kick, from their hips and rotation without a kickboard on your side or on your back, period.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, on your back with a kickboard above your head doesn't change the body position as much as it does on your front. And I think as adults, when we get older and less flexible, there lies the problem.
Yeah. And you were talking about the, I think that's a big thing in masters. You have to know your swimmers. And one-on-one conversations with every single person in the pool is extremely important. You need to get to know them. You need to get to know their ailments. You need to get to know what hurts and what they can and can't do. And, that's a big part of it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Absolutely. I was going to ask you how you mentioned before that you were an age group swimmer yourself, and I know you don't like talking as much about yourself, but how did you find your way to swimming as an age grouper when you were younger?
Well, I grew up in Missouri, out in farm country, and mom says that she just threw me in the pond, and that's how I learned how to swim. So it's been since I can remember, I've always swam on a team. That's how young I started, And what's funny is an adult, and I just told my mom this, a few months ago, is, she was... Both my parents worked, and my sister and I had practice at 5:30 in the morning and 6 at night, and she was up driving, at 4:30 in the morning and then driving at night and doing work, and didn't think anything of it as a kid. And now as an adult, you're like, holy moly, So I just always swam, and then we moved out here to Southern California in 1978, and I joined a club team in Torrance, California at the Plunge and swam. And I swam up through high school, and then I hit a rebellion stage because it was so ingrained in me that I stopped swimming for quite a few years because it was, you know, back in the day, your parents could just tell you to do it. It's not like it is today to where there's a little more conversation. You know, back then, if I came home crying because my coach said something, my dad would say, you need to listen to your coach.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I was just thinking of the story. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, that definitely. I grew up in that same that same kind of conversation.
Yeah. But loved it, you know, swimming as a, I was very competitive with my sister too all the time. So that was fun.
Yeah. I think it helps to have a sibling rivalry.
Oh yeah, it does. Yep. But yeah, so that I just always have, since I remember being born, it seems like I've been in the water.
Yeah.
Just the water.
And were you swimming individual medleys back then? Is that where your love of individual medley came from?
Yeah. Always loved individual IM stuff. Absolutely love butterfly. If I wasn't leading by breaststroke, I was done for, you know, because breaststroke just difficult and still is for me these days. But yeah, honestly, for me, freestyle makes my mind wander, you know, especially distance freestyle. Yeah. And I think all swimmers like that, especially master swimmers, you know, you're doing the mile and you're thinking about what's for dinner and what's going on. And you're like, oh my God, I got to focus on my stroke, you know, where NIM to me takes a lot more effort and concentration on each of the strokes and the legal turns you're doing, even though that should be second nature at this point. You know, it's just a more focused thing for me.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about in a IM swim for sure. And all the different changes to the turns in the last few years as well. There's a lot to put in your kit bag.
Oh, I had to relearn a lot of that, right? As an adult, you know, coming off the wall and, you know, even doing, you know, a dolphin kick, you know, which wasn't used to be allowed. And I mean, when I grew up swimming, we didn't wear goggles and our favorite friend was Visine for your eyeballs, you know, and you know, diving in 2 feet of water was legal because that's just what you did back then. So when I took those 20 years off and came back, I had to take a bunch of certification courses to learn all the new, the changes and the new dynamics and how they coach things differently.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was at the FINA World Short Course Championships just before Christmas in Melbourne. And I was surprised how many of those elite swimmers were disqualified, particularly in breaststroke and medley turns. So it shows you that, you know, even the elites are having trouble with that kind of thing now. And particularly that dolphin kick off the wall before you do your breaststroke breakout. A lot of people were getting caught with that, doing another movement in their breaststroke.
Yeah, I said earlier that it takes more concentration, but it is one thing that I focus in practice because I coach a lot of IMs. Every wall needs to be legal. Don't come up to me on one hand and breaststroke in practice. You need to practice what you're going to do. I don't care if you're not going to race, right? Because like I said earlier, we're not all of them are competition. I still want you to do it legal. Everything needs to be legal the whole time. But I also officiate also stroke and turn, and I just started doing starts. So I totally understand those DQs are common. Even at nationals when I officiate, that's where, unfortunately, you know, you're right there at the wall. I'm going to see you.
Yeah. And I think for the first time ever at the FINA Worlds in Melbourne, they actually had video footage. So sometimes they actually went to the video footage and looked at it before they gave the DQ. So it would be sort of a few minutes before the race was ratified.
Yeah. I'm okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah. I mean, I've had a brain fart, excuse me, in an IM and, you know, gone from back to breast without touching the wall and flipping over, you know, and then you come off on breast and you're like, whoop, I'm done. Okay.
And in your own IM swimming, is butterfly your strongest leg? And then it goes down from there?
Yeah, butterfly back. I was butterfly absolute favorite. Backstroke was good and freestyle was okay in, but breaststroke, you know, there's just such a difference that if I wasn't leading by breaststroke, it was going to be a struggle.
And you said you had 20 years out of the water. So what prompted you to get back into masters?
Actually, you know, the Long Beach Guardians that I, coach is, was formulated as a gay and lesbian team to have a place that you could meet people that are like-minded and not always going to bars and everything else, because this is, you know, 20 some years ago when things were different. And I had decided after 20 years that I wanted to get back in shape and started looking for a gay team in Southern California. And I stumbled on the Long Beach Guardians at that time. And so I think I was just ready. You know, you grow up and you realize, hey, you know, first I need to stay in shape. I want to stay in shape. I want that community again. You know, I love the team environment, which I think is why I like to coach. You know, I'm not a runner. I can't weightlift on my own. I everything I do needs to be a team sport. That's just my personality.
Yeah, and I think Master Swimming definitely offers that. That sense of community is very, very strong.
Yeah, very strong and very important. I mean, I had a coach who just went back to Australia for his job for 6 months. And he had said before he left, the only thing that was keeping him here was the team and the Masters community. That was the only reason why he hadn't left yet. And he ended up having. So hopefully we get him back.
Yes. Where did he, which city did he come to in Australia?
I think it's north of Brisbane somewhere. You know, he works on the shipping containers. But yeah, really, really, really great coach from Australia. A newer coach that just went through the certification. Amazing that our swimmers just clinged on to him like crazy. He was just a sure fit for it.
I'm sure he'll find a team in Queensland. There's lots of master swimming teams up there. So
no, we want him back. No, he needs. But yeah, so I was just ready. I was just ready after 20 years to come back. I wanted to find. I wanted to get in shape and, you know, do it with other people, you know, that were like-minded. That was why.
And as a club, did you find, obviously we all had trouble going through COVID, but when you were allowed to then start swimming again, did you find workouts in the open water were sort of an entree back into getting into the pool? How did that all work in California?
I have a coach that does open water. And so we had some people willing to do open water. In Long Beach, California, in our bay, the water is not the best. So a lot of people won't swim in that area because you come out looking like a green moss monster sometimes. So we did some open water. The team stayed connected through Zoom happy hours and that kind of stuff. And then slowly, like everybody else, our pools opened and we were allowed one person per lane. Then we were allowed one at each end of the lane. And then we were allowed three with one person in the middle, you know. So that's how it all started back for us. But we did some open water. The most important thing for me, for the team, was just to stay connected through Zoom. You know, we did socials in a park outdoors 6 feet away where everybody brought their own food and didn't share anything, like at a potluck or something, you know. So we just tried to take, you know, it was like any other team. I think we tried to stay connected in any way we could, is what it came down to.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams did that. And certainly my club is now building back up again to the members. We're probably about the same size as you, around about 150 to 170 members. But it did dip down, obviously, during COVID. And, you know, last year we've just started to recover, really.
Well, what I found funny was that, you know, for so many months, everybody pretty much was getting their own lane. So then when we went back to four or five per lane, everybody complained. I can't see it. Crowded, you know. Leave 5 seconds, leave 10 seconds, you'll be fine.
I think one of the hardest things for people coming to Masters when they haven't done any swimming before is learning that sort of pool etiquette.
It absolutely is. I mean, especially in if you got five or six people to lane and it's a short course, yards or meters lane, and if they're not circle swimming, it's a big problem, right? So it is something that we of course we have on our website, lane etiquette, you know, and that kind of stuff. But I am blessed to have some really good swimmers always in the pool that of course, take over some of that coaching and say, all right, you're going to go down the right side, back to left, or whatever it is. You know, we're going to leave 5 seconds apart, or the person will be behind him will tell him, now you go. You know, the funniest thing for me with new swimmers is having them try to read an analog clock. You know, if that's on, if the send off is on, like, you know, 40 seconds or 50 seconds, you know, after the first one, they're just lost. They're done, gone. You know, that to me is the hardest thing with new swimmers to teach instead of the digital clock. But you're right. It's a safety issue, and it's something that needs to be addressed with brand new swimmers who have never been on a team, that have only lap swim, right? So, yeah, it is something.
Yeah, I think a lot of people struggle with the analog clock. Certainly younger people do.
Yeah, I'm old, so yeah, analog clock is nature to me, you know.
I kind of think when I go for my swimming workout that using the clock is keeping my mind mathematically focused.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because even at this point, you get to the wall and you're like, okay, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 seconds. Okay, I go here, right? Yeah. You know, I have 10 seconds of rest, you know?
Yeah.
So absolutely keep you active. And again, it's communication in the lane again. You know, when do we go? All right, we're going to go on the 10 after, you know, or 15 after. And so it's just, again, it's the camaraderie and then getting them to talk again. Always good.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a little question for you. Are you a person that subtracts the interval in your mind, or do you add it? So
I add it.
You add it? Yeah.
I do add it. Yeah.
I change depending on how far into the set I am, which is really weird.
Oh, yeah.
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 If I'm over halfway, I'll subtract it.
Yeah. Or if I'm really lazy, I'll say, okay, go on this 40, then you go on the next 35, then you go on the next 10, you know, I'll do something like that. A lot of times I'm like, when do we leave?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Or, you know, how many repeats is that? Because I often go into wishful lapping.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or you get to the wall and you're like, was that really a 400? And did we do 350? And then, you know, somebody in the lane will be honest.
Yes.
They will tell you. Somebody in the lane will tell you.
That's for sure. Absolutely.
I mean, you know, as a coach too, that my lane leader, I want them to understand the clock, right? Because if your leader doesn't know what's going on, your whole lane's going to be messed up, right? So that leader needs to understand the set, understand what you're trying to get out of it, and understand how to read the clock.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think luckily, usually the lane leader is someone who does know. So that's good.
Yeah. Until it's a 400 IM and they're all like, no, you go, no, you go, no, you go. Right?
So. Absolutely. Well, Ken, each time I have a guest on, I like to ask them the deep dive fast five, which are five quick questions, first thing that comes to your mind. So I wanted to ask you what your favorite pool is.
Oh, Belmont.
Yeah, is that the one at the college?
Yeah, no, Belmont is in Long Beach. Right now it's a Mercy. I love that pool.
Fantastic. And what about your favorite pre-race food?
Oh, I'm old school. I'm still doing, well, the night before, I'm still doing pasta, you know, but pre-race, okay, some type of bar.
So like a muesli bar or a protein bar, that kind of thing?
I mean, I would love it to be a Hershey's bar, but yes, a protein bar.
Yeah. And what's your favorite freestyle set that you give your grunions?
To me, it's a ladder set. You know, I want them thinking, right? You know, whether it can be as simple as 50, 100, 200, 250, you know, some of it with paddles, some with not. I can't do 10 100s is about my limit. It's boring for me, and I do not want them to be bored. Not saying there aren't swimmers who absolutely love that. I just always want to challenge them. So to me, it's got to be some type of ladder. And I know you said freestyle. I do a lot of IM. I want that IM reversed. You're going to do fly back breast free. Then you're doing back breast free fly. Then you're doing, you know, breast free, you know, but, you know, I want to change it up all the time to keep them focused.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. So ladders are big.
Ladders. But yeah, I love ladders.
Yep. And what's your favorite butterfly technique drill?
I would say just one arm technique work. I do a lot of talk about belly dancers and chest pressing and letting your body follow through. So really important technique for me is chest presses and follow through, butt out of the water, as we say, you know. And but the swimmers get a kick on the swimmers get a kick on the deck when I belly dance for them, showing the undulation that I won in butterfly. So that's one of my favorites. gotta make it fun.
Of course. And do you prefer kick or pull?
Pull. Yeah, I'm more of an upper body swimmer.
Okay.
I will do a full 1 hour pull set if I could, but my shoulders may not make it, and neither would my shoulders. But yeah, I prefer pull than kick.
And what's your favorite dry land exercise?
Simple basic leg lifts, 6 inches off the ground, hold.
On your back?
On your back, yep. On your back, leg lifts, 6 inches off the ground. Because it's, to me, the core is really, really important. So that's one of my favorite things.
Arms beside or above your head?
What, for your legs?
No. When you're holding your legs off, where are your arms? Are they beside your body or are they above your head?
Across.
Across. Okay.
Yep, out like a cross. Yeah.
And this is not one of the five questions, but do you do much dry land work with your team before they get in the water?
We haven't for years leading up to COVID and everything else. We have done in the past band work and all sorts of other stuff like that. But right now we're not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good to know what other teams are doing. Well, Ken, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's been lovely connecting with you and hearing how you do things in Long Beach, California. And good luck for the Eagler Games later in the year.
Yeah, well, thank you. I enjoyed this very much and, you know, hope somebody can get something out of this.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Well, thank you very much and take care.
Nathan.
Take care, Bob.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Ken and took something away to try on your own training, which really is the aim of Torpedo Swim Talk podcast. As mentioned at the top of the episode, look out for Ken's training session later in the week. I'm even going to give it a try myself, and it will be on our Insta and Facebook social pages, so follow us there so you don't miss out. Till next time, happy swimming and bye for now.